This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Fuck yeah.
Tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
All right, hit the lights. It's Sunday night. Welcome to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law. That's HDLawSC.com. We are a family here on SEC Sunday Night, and we believe in putting our arms around you, pulling you into a conversation, and bringing a serious conversation for all of our serious sports fans out there. But sometimes it just lays back and gets a little casual, and we appreciate that. And so do Brad and Dean at Hewitt Domodiros. It's not all business. They want to get to know your story, but they will get down to business and will win you tens of millions of dollars if you continue to have claims. If we continue to have personal injury claims, you're going to go back to them time and time again. You can look at their track record. You can look at the millions of dollars that they've won for their clients, and you're going to want to call them. Not just because they win, but also because they care. Hewitt Domodiros Law, HDLawSC.com. All right. Welcome in, boys. It's Sunday night, and we are here, and we are ready. The NFL is raging on the past couple of days, and we're gearing up for college football national championship. We also have basketball rolling at this point. But before we get into anything, let's do what we do. Craig's already showing it off. What's in the cups tonight, gentlemen?
Unsweetened McDonald's iced tea.
Kick him out. Where's the
chat
box?
Grab your pine needles. I've got some unsweetened iced tea.
Where is the chat box? He's drinking unsweetened tea from McDonald's. Kick him out.
What's wrong with unsweetened tea?
Everything.
Although I might double down here, Rob. I got Snapple peach iced tea.
Snapple. Not in a glass anymore.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm drinking my Powerade, my orange Powerade here. That's what I brought for the boys. I just happen to have this one laying around from the other day. So I thought I was going to double down on the iced tea.
I enjoy
a Snapple iced tea, but not tonight.
All right.
What's your go-to Arnold Palmer? Is it Snapple or is it the actual?
The actual Arnold Palmer. Get out.
I'm just asking. Listen, why can't I ask a question? It's still 99 cents, unlike everything else, which is ridiculous.
Yes, crazy questions. That's why you can't ask any questions.
Yeah, the Arizona iced tea is the best one. You mix it with a little vodka and just put a splash of Red Bull in there.
All right. You heard it here. Anybody out
drinking,
there?
By the way, Mr. Don't Drink Unsweetened Iced Tea.
I'm drinking zero sugar Dr. Pepper because it's a pepper thing. Wow. And so, I'm also
you drink zero sugar, that's okay. But if I drink zero sugar, it's like, oh, what a Yankee.
But you just don't do that in tea. You just don't do that with tea. I'm also drinking a Powerade Flash IV. I mean a Body Armor. Sorry, Body Armor. I put down the Powerade. Body Armor's good. Also zero sugar. Also zero sugar.
It's not good.
It is good. You can taste the salt.
That literally looks like amoxicillin that we give to our kids.
Gatorade, the white Gatorade, that white cherry or whatever they call it, is delicious.
Oh, it is orange, it is red, and that's it. That's it, Mr. Powerade.
Today, no, it's always lemon lime, and that's what I'm drinking. Okay.
Oh, lemon lime's pretty good. Okay.
Let's start off with our headlines of the week, and those are always brought to us by MBG, who puts the boards together for us. Casey, bust out your readers. It's time to dive into a few boards here.
All right, here we go. From our friends at On3, MBG says, oh, crap, Kentucky won. And who is this? Anon? Oh, my God. 1759676 8907. I guess.
For a good time, call.
I guess 906 was taken. Would I be a bad fan if I said, winning this game is bad for the future health of the program? I guess Kentucky came all the way back and beat Tennessee yesterday. And so I guess he's asking, is it bad?
It was a couple of days ago. But, yes, it was a crazy – well, no, that was yesterday. You're right.
That was it.
I'm thinking LSU.
Correct you on your show.
I'm thinking LSU, which was a couple of days ago. Also a Kentucky comeback. Continue.
That's it. What do you think? Is it bad for Kentucky to keep winning? Is it because they want Mark Pope gone?
We're going to talk about this as we get into the rest of the show, and we have a little basketball segment keyed up after this. Is it too early to be calling for Mark Pope? It's not that bad.
Yeah, but Mark Pope got himself into some trouble at the start of the season, and I feel like, are they just looking for an excuse?
Okay, let's tie things together here, because here's what we know about sports fans and the fanatic version that live in the SEC, right?
Right.
What just happened during football season with this university?
They fired their head coach.
Was not good. Was not good. And what if you had to pick one school in the SEC that is known for basketball success, who is it?
Georgia.
Kentucky.
It's Kentucky. Oh, so
they travel.
Here's what they want to know. If we suck at everything else, this is where our bread is buttered. And we want to be able to come here and rely on this team to pick up our morale. And when you come off a season, when you fire your head coach in football and it's not perfect on the hardwood, that's a tough sell in Lexington.
But does Will Stein give him some cover? Because I feel like Will Stein has come in with a lot of energy.
Not at Kentucky.
No, not at Kentucky. Maybe if he closes the deal on Sam Lovett, but probably not.
Well, I think you got Cal having success at Arkansas.
Yep.
Was it Mike White that went from Georgia to Florida, won a national championship in only just a couple of years? I think, unfortunately, Mark Pope is up against that in his conference. Yep. So, and it's Kentucky. So we're piling on, and it's Kentucky. Patino, what's his name? Patino. Yeah, Rick Patino. He's having success at St. John's in a year. And so it's former Kentucky guys having success when they go somewhere else. They bring home their one of their star players from yesteryear, and he's losing more than he's winning. Yeah, I mean, I think they're again, it's the dumbest question that I ask every single time, that who do they want? But you look at Ryan Odom's doing well at Virginia, so like there's a bunch of sample size, I guess, of guys that are coming in and turning it around year one or year two.
Got nothing.
Rob's on mute, so it's
all right. I'm muted. Sorry, it's because I'm typing. Yeah, I don't know. You make a great point, Casey, and this is a point that I make about people all the
time. Write it down. First time ever, Craig.
Like, I make this point about programs all the time, and Craig hates to hear it. But here's the deal. Some people don't like this point. I've heard people say, I stay away from that point. I don't want to make that point. I, for one, am going to always hammer the, well, who else can we get point? And in this case,
I don't hammer you for that.
No, 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 you don't. You don't hammer me for that. Okay. Not that point specifically. But I do know people. I do know people. I do know people. Yes, it is. I do know people who don't like it when I make that point. But I'm always. I can't get past it. I just personally, I can't get around it. If it's not working for you in this situation, give me the solution. Who do you want your program to hire? But Casey, you make a good. Pretty good point. There's other coaches out there that are going to get a comp. Our friend Mike Morgan has said many times that Kirk Cignetti is getting people fired left and right. Clark Lee is getting people fired left and right because we're seeing what can be done, how lesser programs can be elevated through proper use of the transfer portal to support Craig's point to go against my patience. Yep. And so that ties right back into what you're saying here, Casey. You're going to easily look at other programs, and Cal is one of them in Arkansas. You're going to look at other programs if you're a Kentucky fan and say, we're supposed to be better than them. Why is this not happening?
But isn't the answer, especially in college basketball, who is the Cinderella? Who's going to make the deep run? Because almost always we see that we see that instance where the little Cinderella kind of comes through. They win a couple of games. Maybe they get to an Elite Eight. Maybe they get to a Final Four, and then they go up to a Kentucky job. It happened with Florida. It happened with Arizona State in women's basketball, where they're picking up, you know, these cream of the crop, somebody doing something a little bit different.
Yep.
Maybe Kentucky.
What happened with Michigan too, and look at the type of year that they're having. Okay. Yeah. You make a good point. And that's kind of what happened with Mark Pope, and he already had a Kentucky tie. It's just, if things aren't perfect in Lexington, they're always going to have something to say. All right, on to the next one.
All right, MBG says, Tennessee is the only school in the country charging a talent fee while not acquiring any talent. I love this one, by the way. This is our friend from the Vol Quest on three board, the General's Quarters. This is the Vol Realist. He says, excuse me, our AD and anybody involved in this blank show of a transfer portal hall can kick rocks. Only school in the country charging a quote talent fee, yet not acquiring any top talent. F Danny White. What do you think?
For those of you who don't know what he's talking about, Tennessee charges a talent fee on their tickets. It's something that was instituted recently in the past years to help them with the revenue sharing budget and NIL. Okay. So this fan is upset because they're paying a talent fee for no talent. It seems that if you're charging a talent fee, that you might have a little more in the coffers to get in some top tier talent. I don't know. But this is what we talk about all the time, I think, and just in terms of the passion of the college football.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits. Sharia, who's making progress with meds. And Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Fan, or the passion of fans in general in the SEC, is that, you know, and the reason that we do these boards is obviously to highlight that, and it pushes it to the extreme. People have expectations that are unrealistic. Craig, I can see you chomping at the bit. Your thoughts on Rocky Top?
Okay, but if you're a Vols fan, you made the playoff 2 years ago now and got your ass handed to you by Ohio State. And then this year, you got Joey Aguilar, who showed flashes of doing some things, but then you end up 8-5 by losing to Illinois in the Music City Bowl. So, yeah, I'm right there with our guy, the Vol Realist. I'd be pissed. You had Sam Levitt there for two days.
Did we just agree with a board?
I'm agreeing with the board. I think this is a very logical, level-headed response.
Write that one down too, Casey, because I don't know if we've ever had a logical, level-headed message board post that we
literally
were,
a first.
That we were talking about on here.
Well, maybe to
Greg. But so we're gonna talk about Tennessee a little bit later. But they were 8-5 this year, and yeah. and they looked like I'm sorry. Dog poo poo most of the season. They
looked no defense.
The defense wasn't good, but what
they're
was
pretty
the
good against your dogs.
Were they for like three quarters, and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
So great, they were almost good enough. But if I'm a Vols fan, it's like you're kind of spinning your wheels a little bit. You've seen Oklahoma now pass you by. Heupel has been good, but not great. And it's just like, where are you going? And then what quarterback are they going to go with? They're going to go with the two young kids? I mean, I guess. But, like, as a Vols fan, you're wanting more. Hell, Ole Miss was 11-1 this year. You need to see more. So I'm okay with this guy being a little angry and upset because I'm a little fired up.
I think somebody predicted that Ole Miss was going to be 11-1. More on that later on in the show. All right, last board. We only have three this week. Let's go to Norman.
All right, from MBG says, this Oklahoma fan thinks Indiana is stealing opposing teams' plays from the clouds goggle. This is our friend OU Fly Guy. And this was in response to another Cherokee Okie. But he says, this is what Indiana is doing as they steal all the other teams' plays from the clouds goggle. Indiana football cheating. You see what I did there with shortening the football because it's only one L? I should probably read the first part, too.
The first part because that sense is...
Yeah, so it makes sense. All right, so Cherokee Okie said, so if you look at play calling as the ability to draw on past experiences in similar game situations using your currently available players and player types to dictate the next play, why not feed all that data into databases and then just ask ChatGPT what play to call? You could even feed all the defensive tendencies data for the opposing teams along with the defensive players' past performances using number recognition software to know what players are on the field. Bob's your uncle. Don't know what that means. So then our friends, OU Fly Guy said, this is what Indiana is doing as they steal all the other teams' plays from the clouds, goggle, Indiana football cheating.
Okay. There you go. It's that simple. Because that made tons of sense to me. So it can't be that hard. I have no idea what he just read.
So, okay, let me break it down for you.
No clue what this guy's talking about.
These are your huddle reports. Isn't this everything like what we're doing at the high school and the college level?
Is this what he's talking about? He's trying to talk about huddle? What?
Can somebody explain the cloud goggle for me?
Is this a Google cloud? Is that what he's trying to say?
The clouds. No, it's the clouds goggle. That's a different version. It must be the upgraded version of huddle. But like, this is what you're doing in huddle. You're getting the defensive tendencies. You're getting the offensive tendencies. I mean, the idea of throwing it into ChatGPT, but in like getting, you know, what do the analytics say? But I still don't know what the hell clouds goggle is and what this guy's saying. But
what happened to good old days of just trading VHS tapes?
Or like stealing signs, like just using yourself. Oh wait, sorry, that was Michigan. My bad.
All right.
But can we talk about
Indiana's case? I'm not even pulling for – we're going to get to this later, too.
You're not even pulling for Indiana.
I'm not.
Grab your cappuccino.
I'm not pulling for them, but I don't think they're cheating. They're just good.
No, they are good. You know,
they are good.
Can I be honest?
They're just good.
The other one that I'm really tired of hearing, oh, my God, did you hear how old Indiana is? Yeah, okay, great. They're old dudes. How about they're just really well coached?
Yeah, they're disciplined and they execute. That's pretty much everybody sums it up.
Netty flowers right now. They're not good.
No. It's just garbage. And by the way,
I woke up to a video of Kurt Cignetti stumbling down the steps from their jet, and it was very like it threw me back a couple of years to post of Joe Biden not being able to walk down the sidewalk or something like that. And that's exactly what.
Let's stick to sports here, buddy.
That's what the poster of the video was trying to imply by posting Cignetti stumbling on the steps of the plane. And I'm like, this is how far we've come that people are coping this hard that they can't put up with the fact that Indiana's just good.
That Indiana's going to smash the hell out of Miami tomorrow.
Okay, Craig, that's the final segment. All right. That's all we have for It Just Means More Genius. Our friend Connor Goodson is here to talk some hoops. Casey, are you? What's your schedule tonight, my friend?
I'm good for a little while, but I might just disappear on y'all at one point.
Whenever you're in and you're out, you're like a phantom, whatever happens. But let's welcome Connor from Hog Sports in here. Connor, what's going on, my friend? How are you? We are coming off our opening message board segment, which often requires us to at this point, narrow our focus and get a little serious. So we're glad you're here.
Yeah, appreciate y'all having me on. always fun to catch y'all's conversations before I hop in here. It's interesting stuff, man.
We can get a little weird if you like as well, too, Connor. Just let us know, and we are ready to go.
Yeah, I'm up for anything, man. You know I'm an easy guest, man.
Well, we're taking a hard turn into basketball season, and you know, for the average SEC fan, I would say that that first month and a half, really the non-conference for sure, really gets lost in the end of football season. Oh, yeah. However, some schools are ready to turn the page. Not the best year for Arkansas on the gridiron, obviously. You get some positive momentum with coaching hires in a lot of schools across the SEC where that's able to lighten the mood just a little bit. But in Arkansas specifically, you have a coach in John Calipari who has had a lot of success. And I would say this is the most talented team that he's had since he's been in Arkansas. And the run that they made last year in the NCAA tournament was something that really piqued my interest going into this season, because I was telling Craig earlier, Connor, I don't know that it really matters exactly where they finish in terms of the seeding, because we're going to get to this, but the SEC is so kind of jumbled up. I'm going to trust a team that now has some experience, that has some veteran leadership, and a coach like John Calipari, when they get to the tournament in March, to be somebody that I'm looking at to make a run. Whether they elevate through the end of this season and they end up as a 3 or 4 seed, or they stay inconsistent and they end up being like a 9 or a 10 seed, whatever the case may be, I've got my eye on them. I would not want to be a 1 seed who catches them coming out of that 8-9 game. That's for sure.
I definitely think that this team is built like those typical John Calipari teams that have gone on deep runs and had success in March. You know, you've got the fabulous freshman duo of Malik Thomas and Darius Acuff, who are really kind of the offensive engine. But some of the key cogs from last year's deep tournament run, Trevin Brazil, DJ Wagner, Carter Knox, Billy Richmond also, he's like the energizer bunny for this team. Probably one of the most fun players to watch just individually, just how he comes in and completely changes the complexion of the game with his injury or with his energy. You've got those key cogs back with those freshman guys that can kind of, you know, on nights when they're struggling, on paper, it's good to have that experience. You also have veterans like Malik Ewan and Nick Pringle. So this team is built to go on runs, to go on a deep run, and they're built for success. They're still just not there. And you've got to be able to carry some of that energy and success onto the road. And what we've seen these first two weekends is, you know, you go to Auburn, you have that short turnaround from Oxford to Auburn. You narrowly hang on and beat Ole Miss, and then you get really humbled by Auburn. And then Arkansas this past weekend, you know, they get a blowout win over South Carolina midweek. They go to Athens, and they really got it put on them early on, and then they fought back, tied the game late, but they used all their energy to come back after digging such a big hole. So the talent's there. The raw, like, you know, this offense is one of the best Arkansas fans have seen in honestly since the 90s, really, just from a statistical standpoint. But the talent's there. The offense is there. You got to shore up some things defensively. But that blueprint, it looks really nice. And like you said, Rob, you know, this team, you know, it's going to catch some people's eyes, you know, when they beat Texas Tech, when they almost beat Duke, they beat Louisville at home. That was kind of turning some heads early in the national scene. And so I think that now they've kind of hit a lull. They're trying to rediscover themselves through conference play and pick up some of these bigger wins on the resume. It just, they're still just not quite to the level I think that they need to be to go on a run, but you can kind of see them progress a little bit further each time out.
Yeah. I mean, the recipe is there. And you mentioned the Duke game and all the – they lost that game. It is something that really stuck in my mind, their ability to play so closely with the Blue Devils. Here, you know, the recipe is exactly what you said. A couple of freshman phenoms, and then you need some veteran presence. And DJ Wagner, to me, really is one of those guys that really holds that all together. Somebody who's been with Cal for a while, somebody who sees it.
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money.
Somebody who understands. You talked about Brazil. You talked about Carter Knox. Guys who have just kind of been around and were there for last year's run, I think bring a lot to the table when it comes to this year. What have you seen in terms of the rest of the SEC as you've kind of seen Arkansas move up and down with these teams? Is there one group of talent on another team that sticks out to you? Because as it stands to me right now, we can look at the standings. But you've got teams like Vanderbilt and Georgia kind of hanging around towards the top. It doesn't make a lot of traditional, historical, logical sense. And it's a little bit jumbled up in there, and we don't have anybody emerging as a front runner just yet. What do you think?
Yeah. Vanderbilt's success, I think, this year has really stood out to me. Obviously, Mark Byington, really big fan of what he's been able to do in his career, and obviously what he's been able to do his short time at Vanderbilt. They actually come into Fayetteville Tuesday night for a big game against Arkansas, but they're a team that's really stood out to me that I think that a lot of people had them on fraud watch earlier in the season, but I think that they've proven that they can really hang with some of these elite teams. Florida, you know, as bad as Boogie Flann and Xavier Lee had looked earlier in the season, they're starting to come along, and as they come along, that you can kind of see the vision with this Florida ball club. And I think that people kind of had them written off after they went, like, I think they started 5-4 on the year. But now you look at them, I think they're atop the SEC standings, and with that championship pedigree, their front court is exactly what you would want in an experienced championship type front court. So they're a team that I think that has kind of flown under the radar because of their bad start earlier in the season, but they're right there picking up where they left off in conference play last year. So they're a scary team. Nate Oates is always going to have Alabama really, really good. He's got that kind of thing rolling. They're battling some injuries with certain guys, but they're really kind of, I think, a team that scares me if I'm an Arkansas fan, and some of these other teams, that they're a team that I think could get hot and really, really do some damage.
I think you saw that last night too, with Georgia. They have really picked up. I think this year they've been kind of like slowly progressing, and this year it seems like when they're shooting the hell out of the ball, like they're going to be tough to beat. And to me, if they can stay hot, that's a team that can maybe make a run in the NCAA, in the SEC tournament, also the NCAA tournament. Anything you saw out of the Dogs this weekend that you thought was like, you know, that you've seen growth out of the team, like from the past couple of years?
You know, their big man, Samto Cyril, he finished like 6 points, 5 rebounds or something like that. Career high 7 blocks, though. In Arkansas, I think, was like 13 of 28 on layups because of his paint presence. And that dude, you know, he was originally committed to Cal at Kentucky before he was hired, obviously, at Arkansas during that offseason. I think he was one of his first commits of that class. Obviously opts to go to Georgia over Arkansas once Cal, you know, moves over. But he was a guy that I've been really watching. He was a lot raw. I think he came into Athens a little bit, you know, on the heavier side in terms of, you know, conditioning and stuff like that. But as Georgia has kind of, you know, Mike White's really changed their kind of game plan to go into this crazy up-tempo playing with this insane pace, he's kind of really fit that really well to be able to, you know, kind of give them an interior presence in the half court. But he's really, really strong, open, running in the open floor. He's really impressed me, and just his physicality and intimidation that he gives other teams to when they have to second guess themselves when they bring it inside. That really kind of unlocks a different dynamic. Obviously, Jeremiah Wilkinson, usually when you get these high usage, high volume guards from, you know, transferring in from different places, it's hard for them to keep that same, like, you know, production level. But Jeremiah Wilkinson's a guy that I've been really pleasantly surprised with how he's jumped in and really been able to elevate his game to another level with Georgia, which is kind of rare to see these days with high level transfers. So, Mike White's got a good thing going. Georgia's a really, really good team, and it would not shock me if we look up that second weekend and the Dogs are there.
The one more question outside of Fayetteville, and then we'll bring it back in. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Auburn earlier. You got obviously another matchup with them coming up. The transition from Bruce Pearl to Stephen Pearl, not as smooth as the Auburn fans would have liked. They've become a powerhouse in the past. But another thing that I would point out here is that you had some talent transition on with this team from mm-hmm. last year to this year too. And as good as Auburn was under Bruce Pearl year in and year out, this is still, I don't think, to the level of a program that reloads like a program like a Duke or somebody that they faced off with or were matched up in the tournament. So the expectations, our friend Mike Morgan always says something along these lines, who called the Arkansas South Carolina game on ESPN the other night. He says that the high watermark for any program is where fans set their expectations every year. So whatever the best thing that you've ever done is, that's where every fan expects you to be. That high watermark is pretty high in Auburn, Alabama, in the jungle right now. Mm-hmm. But they've just been a little inconsistent getting it going. When you look at a team like an Auburn, you mentioned Florida as well. You know Boogie Flan well, right? You've seen him mm-hmm. play.
Yeah.
They're trying to get it together. They're coming off of a national championship. You have a lot of these middle-tier teams. Arkansas fits right in the middle there where you've had some big moments this year, and then you've had some kind of head-scratching moments. If you're looking at it right now, who sticks out to you that's going to elevate out of that middle tier in the SEC? Is there a team or two that says, hey, we're going to start taking over this thing? Because we're in the thick of the conference schedule at this point. And we're about to start rolling and start defining some seasons.
Well, I'll be honest. I had Kentucky kind of dead in the water a couple weeks ago, man. And they're a team now that is kind of in that middle tier. They look to, they have their flaws, obviously. But they're a team that I think you can't discount what they've been able to do the past two games, which is, I mean, obviously they're playing with fire, being down 16 every game and coming back. But just the ability to come back and dig themselves out of those holes and be able to have the resilience to actually finish those comebacks off, I think is really impressive to me. And I think that, the momentum that builds game to game can't be discounted. And so they're a team that I think could really, really kind of elevate themselves into this mix. Auburn's another one you talked about a little bit there. The change from going to Bruce Pearl to Stephen Pearl, well, on paper, some people might scoff at it and say, well, he's been around the program. It can't be that. It's a lot different. It's different when there's a different voice leading these guys. Obviously, he's probably going to have the same characteristics as his dad did, but it's completely different. The way he approaches individuals on the team is probably different. And so naturally, you need to adjust those expectations. But what I saw from Auburn, obviously, is when they're desperate and when they kind of play with that edge and that back against the wall mentality, they can compete with anyone in the country. It's just being able to harness that on nights when maybe the motivation and the rivalry, the intensity of the game's not quite there. And just, over the course of 40 minutes, being able to consistently have your guys like Keyshawn Hall, like Tahad Pettiford, kind of put it together. And I think that with Auburn, man, you can't discount, in addition to the change from Bruce Pearl, they lost a lot of production from that team and a lot of veteran guys who had kind of been through the mud, been through the trenches on all these, wars and conference, but you can't discount them losing all of that. And then having to kind of refill their arsenal. I think it was something like 80% of their production or some crazy stat from last year. They're kind of going through it a little bit, finding their way, but they're a team that has shown that they can compete with anyone and beat anyone. So I think that as we kind of go along, if they're able to figure it out, they can be really dangerous as we get into the thick of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what Steven's figuring out is like, hey, I'm not daddy. And it's a little bit tough. And let's be honest, Bruce has done it a lot of different places. He's been really successful. And it's always easy to be like the assistant when you're in the background. Right. Now when you're the guy, it makes it a little more difficult. So.
What was funny is so last year at the SEC tournament, in Nashville, I was actually sitting behind they have the first row, then the second row, which is like the first row is like TV scores table or whatever. Arkansas is playing Ole Miss in that second game, that second round game. Winner went on to play Auburn. So Auburn's coaching staff came over and and was like scouting, and I was watching Stephen Pearl kind of clip up some clips of both teams' offenses and kind of label them and do that. And whenever the other assistants came over to him, he was like, it was almost like directing minions. Like, he was just kind of directing them. He's like, all right, so we need this, 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 and this, kind of giving them the rundown. A little bit later, Bruce came in and Steven kind of gave him the update of where they were. So even then, even before, like, I even thought that Bruce would, you know, step down, it was kind of in the back of my head. I was like, you know, maybe one day he's going to get his shot maybe a little bit sooner than we expect. And so that just little anecdote has always stuck with me, that he was kind of directing traffic and getting people kind of where they needed to go. And the dad came in and was like, yeah. So, yeah, but he just needs to find his own style and his own brand. I think that there's no question he could probably get that thing rolling just as Bruce had it.
No doubt about it. Connor, two more things and we'll get you out of here. One last on the basketball front. Obviously, you mentioned kind of the upcoming schedule when it comes to Arkansas. You got to a Vanderbilt team coming in that has, like you said, I think escaped the fraud zone, but is coming off a couple of losses. Yeah. What does it mean for Arkansas to get this one? As you mentioned, Arkansas has just been really up and down. They looked absolutely explosive against South Carolina in the midweek. Yeah. Can they recapture some of that offensive firepower against a Vanderbilt team that has been pretty salty all throughout the year?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key going in. Can they get that offense to play? And their offense has been really, really good in Bud Walton Arena. It's just been able, whenever they've had to travel away, getting that offense to travel with them, or that defense and that effort to travel with them has been an issue. I think that it's a very important game for Arkansas. This next stretch of games, you have a lot of opportunities. You're going to be a favorite.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
favored in the majority of like the next seven. I said coming into this, if Arkansas really wants to kind of maximize their seed potential for the NCAA tournament, they need to win one of these two, Georgia or Vanderbilt. They need to beat one of those, and then they need to kind of go on a run of like six or seven straight here of this next stretch. And I think that sets them up to, you know, if you split some of these other more toss-up games like Florida, Texas A&M, you know, Alabama, you split some of those games and you have that stretch of like six or seven wins against quality teams, and you can maximize that seed potential where you're not stuck in that 8-9, 7-10, 6-11 range where you're playing really solid, stout mid majors or a power five that's capable of beating you. And then, oh, by the way, you might have to go on and play a one or a two seed. You kind of escape that to where you can get into that 4-5 range where there's a little bit more leeway and you get a little bit better matchups. But yeah, so they have to beat Vanderbilt. They have to, one, there needs to be a really, really good environment in Bud Walton, which I think that the arena has done a pretty good job of getting people in there and filling it up and making it a really tough place to play. But you need that. You need the guys to come out focused, ready to kind of lick their wounds and get that bitter taste out of their mouth and kind of make a statement. And I think if Arkansas can really kind of get back to their roots, get back to what they've had success with defensively, and then also getting up and down and having really success in transition on offense, I think that you could see Arkansas really, really picking up a big win because they really need it. Like I said, they need it before this next stretch.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that, like we both said, this is a team that's built to make a run. And and Craig and I said this before we got on the air, it's all going to be about those matchups in the tournament. And so seeding is going to be really, really important. You're not going to want to see them on the other side of it. Even if they get a one or a two seed in the second round, let's say they get in that 8-9 slot and then have to play the one, you're not going to want to see them as a one seed. But if Arkansas can avoid that matchup early, like obviously that's what you want to do, right? Okay. Let's flip it back because there's no offseason in college football.
Yeah.
Anything in terms of let's do a little temperature check on Silver Field and the fan base. How are things progressing as we are in the full swing of the quote unquote SEC offseason now that no SEC teams are playing in the SEC, the national championship game?
You didn't have to bring that up.
Well, we do have a game left tomorrow night. It just doesn't happen to include anybody from the greatest conference. No one even knows
there's a game tomorrow night. No one's been talking about that.
But have you seen continued positive momentum with Ryan Silverfield, or do you feel like it's kind of all heads have turned to the hardwood?
I think for the most part, you've seen people come around to the hire. You know, that initial wave was because fans really didn't expect Silverfield to be the guy. They'd kind of, you know, obviously Golish or someone else was really who everyone expected. So that initial shock and some outrage from some fan bases, I think, has really subsided. And, you know, they had a lot of movement, but his opening press conference, they got commitments from two really important guys in Quincy Rhodes on the defensive line, and then KJ Jackson, the quarterback, young quarterback who was with Arkansas last year. Getting those guys on board won some fans over. They were able to flip some high school guys early on who were in-state guys, and that bought some really positive momentum into the program. And then I think in the transfer portal, it's been they really had a run the first week in the transfer portal where they got some really big names. They really overhauled the secondary. I loved what they did in the cornerback room. I like what they've done with the linebackers. They've shored up the offensive line. Bryant Williams from Louisiana Lafayette, I think, is a really big time get. Probably one of the biggest additions of the offseason. But they still had some holes in safety and up front on the defensive line. You don't quite like where their depth is right now. They added like three or four safeties on Friday. And I think that fans are just cautiously optimistic. Some of them are more just, you know, I need to see proof that this is actually going to work on the field before I can really, you know, make a determination one way or the other. So I think that they've done what they needed to do in the transfer portal, maybe a couple of mistakes and, you know, turning down some guys at safety, some guys on the defensive line. But at the end of the day, with how Arkansas has struggled the last couple of years, none of this means anything for a large segment of fans until we get to Saturdays in the fall. Like they don't want to, you know, hype this team up again and go through the whole offseason process where, you know, they're drinking the Kool-Aid and stuff only for it to be another 2-win season. Like there's a large number of people that I talk to that are just like, this has to be, I'm not going to overhype. I'm not going to undersell. I need to see results. And so, you can sell all these new recruits, this new offense, this new defense, all this other stuff. But if it doesn't result in W's, then a large segment of the fan base is going to be out immediately. So they really need to take this momentum from the portal and build on it and make that result in wins, big wins in the fall of 2026.
That's beautifully said. And, you know, I think that is going to be the cry of so many programs.
Oh yeah.
And the crazy thing is, as soon as this game is played tomorrow night and we wrap up portal stuff truly on Tuesday with the 48-hour business day window that we have to get everybody in, and the way spring ball has kind of evaporated, yeah, we're about to have a long and quiet off season to spin those exact thoughts over and over and over. Connor Goodson of Hawk Sports. Connor, thank you so much for joining us tonight to talk about a little Razorback basketball. And, of course, we slid some football in there, too. Appreciate you as always, my friend.
Appreciate y'all having me on. Always good to talk to y'all.
Yeah, appreciate sounds it, great. We'll see you again soon.
Thank y'all.
All right, we are up against a break here on SEC Sunday Night. We will be right back in just a moment to talk about the transfer portal and a little bit of how Craig and I were right, wrong. We'll see.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt D'Amaduro's Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, Our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamaduros, we're on your team.
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief of Sports Network, presented as always by Hewitt Diamaduros Law, hdlawsc.com. I want to say thank you again to Connor Goodson of Hog Sports for joining us to talk about a little bit of basketball, a little bit of football. Craig, as we turn the page back to football, I also want to say thank you to thousands and thousands of you that are tuning in right now to watch us in the middle of an NFL playoff game. It's probably, admittedly, one of the most difficult weeks of the year for us in terms of competition and what we're up against. We understand that, you know, a lot of times that the NFL is king, but this is just continues to show the tenacity and the intense fandom of the SEC fan. It goes beyond even the things that are dominating the airwaves of the United States. I will say it's 10-10 with 4 minutes left in the third quarter. Chicago and Los Angeles are tied. Shout out to our boy JC Sherbert, who I'm sure is at the tavern and enjoying a cold one as he is watching his Bears play right now on the very cold night in Chicago, Craig.
Question, have you ever been to Chicago?
I have not been to Chicago, no.
Oh my goodness, you got to go to Chicago. That is like my second, that's like my second home. I probably have been there. I'm surprised JC and I have not run into each other. I've probably been there 25, 30 times in my life. So have you never had a Chicago dog?
I have not.
So you get this hot dog, you run it through the garden. It's got the pickle. It's got the lime green celery. You've got the mustard, the tomato. Oh, my God. The celery salt. Oh, my goodness. You have a couple of old styles with those. And, my friend, there is nothing wrong with having, you know, just a handful of, or maybe two or three Chicago dogs, especially if you're at Wrigley Field. My friend, I think we need to make a trip this summer, maybe a little cheese sport get together up in the Windy City. JC, yeah. Get it done, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. We'll get it. We'll get it done in the Windy City. All right, Craig.
Speaking of which, there's a great lacrosse doubleheader going on up in Evanston, so maybe, you know.
Well, can't that's wait what lacrosse season to get started. Bait. That's the bait that we'll use to get you there. Now the rest of us will need something else. So you tell me. As we get into this transfer portal discussion, give me your overview of this year's transfer portal. We've talked a lot about one versus two portals, the acquisition portal versus the cut portal. Now it's all in one. As somebody who's covering it, what's been your overall takeaway this year versus last year with us kind of shrinking to one as we begin to look at the winners and losers in the SEC?
The NIL dollars and these contracts are now starting to wave their head a little bit. We saw Desmond Jennings from Washington go in the portal, fire his agent, and then be like, "Oh wait, I don't want to tell Washington I own $4 million, so I came back." Now we have the issue with Mensa at Duke allegedly going in the portal, And we also have Prince from Ole Miss going in the portal. And, like, this to me is the more interesting part. It's not so much the movement. It's going to be, okay, how are these NIL dollars going to be affected? Because the contracts are saying that the schools own the name, image, and likeness. There's no problem with you going to another school, but we own your name, image, and likeness. You are not going to be profiting off of that. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that goes and what happens. It has been chaotic. I don't know. I still think, you know, you talk about it's going to be nice and quiet now. Now that the portal's over, the national championship will be over tomorrow night.
We'll talk
I think come May, we're going to have a second, or I'm going to call it the silent portal, where we're going to have people opting out, leaving, kind of like the kid did from BYU that went down to Tulane.
The academic transfer.
I'm
going to unenroll and I'm going to go enroll somewhere else.
Yes, I'm going to go enroll somewhere else. So, like, I want to see what the, I know we're going to talk winners and losers. I think the biggest winner of the transfer portal I'm going to talk about is billable hours. Billable hours, as my buddy Dan Wetzel and Pat Forty say, are always undefeated. Lawsuits over, can I transfer? Am I going to have to pay somebody? Can I leave in the spring? And now, they're talking about Ross Dellinger had a story this morning where, some college presidents are saying, get rid of the College Sports Commission, no cap, just, make it a free for all. And, long live billable hours because it's going to work.
All right. So as we look at, you're absolutely right. And it all comes back to the argument about anything that we talk about, whether it's basketball and the NCAA tournament, the college football playoff, the transfer portal, NIL, TV deals, revenue sharing, roster acquisition, roster retention, the rise and fall of some programs and others. It all comes back to the almighty dollar, Craig. It all comes, as much as we don't want to admit that, we don't want to say that, we want to hang our hats on the tradition and the fun and the passion of college football. There's a lot of this that's just simply money driven, and that doesn't do a whole lot for us in terms of the experience. But it does. But it does continue to drive interest and viewership. Okay, when we look at the portal winners and losers, first and foremost, mm-hmm. I'm gonna leave this programming up to you here for just a minute. We're gonna do a little either or. What was choose your own adventure? That's what we're gonna do here.
Those are great. My daughter has a choose your own adventure now.
We're gonna do a little choose your own adventure.
Making good choices. About good choices.
Do you want to discuss our successes and failures as predictors of the college football season first to tee up the transfer portal discussion? Or do you want to talk about the portal and then reflect back on the season that was by breaking down our numbers?
Let's do option one.
Option one comes with visuals, ladies and gents.
Oh, no, you've fallen into a volcano. You have died. Go back to 35.
Option one comes with visuals. So, here are Craig and I. Let me just say, if you have not voted on the poll that I tweeted from the SEC Sunday night. Oh, I haven't even mentioned this. What a terrible host. I'm just doing a great job tonight.
Yeah,
we have a brand new channel. It's at SEC Sunday Show. One of you bozos got us banned on the other one. And so we love all of you who are here listening to us, especially those of you who interact with us. Oh, look at that. Look at that. I didn't even see this earlier, but Courtney is listening and she's in the chat box. Hello, Courtney.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry that I missed out on that earlier. But she had a lot to say about Rocky Top during those boards. But for those of you who are engaged with us, we love you. We love you. Love you. That one person that got our account shut down, you can just kick rocks and run away, as their poster said.
Courtney, I hope your dog's doing well.
Okay. But we do have a new channel at SEC Sunday Show. If you have not followed it, make sure that you get over there and follow it right now. I put a poll up. Ask the question, who do you think predicted games more accurately this season? In the spring, every year, Craig and I predict games. Nearly 200 games predicted. Both of our percentages were in the 60s, Craig.
Nice.
You were nice is a word you're going to need in just a minute. You were at 66%.
Nice.
I was at 69%.
Dope.
So just slightly edging you. It was a couple of games off. We were within a handful of games of each other, which I think is pretty impressive and interesting. And here we have, to help us break down the tiers of teams, what we predicted as the final record, And we're going to start here at the top. What we predicted as the final records, you can see here on screen. We both had Ole Miss at 11-1, which was correct.
Yep.
We both missed on Georgia slightly.
I was closer.
You were closer. And we both had Texas A&M at 8-4. Obviously, we missed on that one. We got Alabama at 9-3. And then Oklahoma, we were way off. This is a big I was wrong, freezing cold take right here. We were not believers in John Mateer. We were not believers in Brent Venables. And they proved to be much better than we expected and made it to the college football playoff. This is tier number one, the teams that were in the college football playoff. Craig, yeah, as it's go ahead.
What do you think? So, okay, I obviously feel good about Ole Miss. Obviously feel good about Georgia. I'm sorry. I don't feel bad about Texas A&M. I feel if they played anybody with a pulse, they probably were closer to 8-4 than they were 11-1 or whatever they did. Because we saw as soon as they played anybody with a pulse, they got their butts kicked.
Yeah, except for Notre Dame. Do we consider Notre Dame a pulse? That's my question. That's a difficult question to answer.
That was a week two Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Okay, so they play. Let's say they play week 9. They play week 10. They play in the first round. I think Notre Dame takes care of business because
sure.
Remember Notre Dame had a true sophomore,
sure.
TJ Carr. Shout out to the Celine Hornets coach, defensive coordinator Corbin Brown, one of my good buddies. They were playing at a high level. Yes. I just call that as a scam. I just call it as a scam. Oklahoma again.
Great defense, crazy gunslinger, quarterback on offense.
Both.
I was so caught off guard at the end of the year when we had Travis Davidson on, and even he pointed to the fact that Oklahoma could potentially look for someone other than John Mateer. You were caught off guard because you thought he was a 1-year rental.
Yeah.
Just somewhere that got stuck in your brain. For me, I just didn't think that would necessarily be an argument considering he won the mid-year Heisman. But
he won the first month Heisman. I don't know if he won the mid-year Heisman.
Well, that's true. He was in surgery by mid-year.
Yeah, he was in surgery by then.
But is that the difference between just making the college football playoff and making a deeper run for them? I think maybe it is. Offensive line play is honestly still the biggest issue in Norman for me because they could not establish a run game. He was their primary runner all year long, and he had to run for his life a lot of times, which was part of the reason why he ran for so many yards was because it was scramble plays. So
if we
look at Oklahoma, it's easy to point at Mateer, and we've heard that argument, and maybe that's the case. Maybe they're going to go get another guy. But continuing to strengthen along the line of scrimmage there on offense, I think improves everything for them.
When you're done.
I'm done.
First,
go ahead.
First, I have a number for you.
Yes.
28. Oklahoma has 28 guys in the portal that are leaving. We're keeping the coordinators. That's going to be new for Brent Venables. He's not cleaning house. It's been something that he's been really good at. But the constant revolving door of athletes, that is a big number. You know, you've got teams like Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, Florida, all had coaches changes moving between 32 and 36. You've got Venables going into year 5, still going 28. That's a lot there. You both have Marcel Reed and you've got John Mateer coming back to A&M and Oklahoma respectively. These are the 5 teams that made the college football playoff, Robin. Before you transition, I'm going to ask you, which of these 5 teams makes it back in 2026?
Georgia.
Anybody else?
Is the easiest one off the rip for me. I'm tempted to say Alabama. Because until I'm proven wrong, I think we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. They won a tough game in Norman. Mm-hmm. They're still a perennial power, although they're not the same type of perennial power they were with Nick Saban. It's not built the same way.
Right.
they still have top tier talent, and they still have a coach who's won an insane amount of games and knows what it is to win football games, and took his team just 2 years ago from Washington to the national championship game. So I don't think that as much as people want to crap on Kalen DeBoer, that that's really the appropriate response. I think it's just juxtapositioned against Nick Saban. It reflects badly on him, but that was going to happen to anybody that stepped into that slot. So I would say Georgia and Alabama, shocker, right? Like, those are the teams that we're always going to expect. And here we have a playoff that is on the brink of getting expanded more. And so it's only going to become, I think, more of a lock to see those types of teams get there. Because even if they have a down year, their down year is still going to fall on the edge of the playoff. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The one that's the most intriguing to me, I don't think Texas A&M and Oklahoma are in the playoff next year. I'll just go ahead and say it. The one that's intriguing to me is Ole Miss.
Yep. I would add that.
Because we're going to talk about the portal again in just a moment, but they're doing really well in the transfer portal. The quarterback position is concerning for me because we still don't have all of the answers that we need there. And if it ends up being Deuce Knight.
You're just dismissing Walker Howard.
I am. If it ends up being Deuce Knight, my question will be about experience, not about ability. The thing that made Trinidad Chambliss special this year was not just his ability to be accurate with the football. It was his moxie and his calmness in the moment, because although he had not been there on that level, he'd played in plenty of football games, and he played
a one-year starter at Ferris State.
High stakes. Yeah, exactly. But he's been around for a long time. He's out of eligibility. He's played 5 years,
yep.
And he won the national championship at Ferris State. So he's been in that type of environment. Yes, it's elevated on this level, and it's elevated in the SEC, certainly. It's elevated in this college football playoff. But he's had this type of it makes a natural sense to progress that way, to go from high school, to go to a school on the level of Ferris State, to go to an Ole Miss on the top level. He's actually feels like he's climbing a ladder. He's walking upstairs, and you're slowly turning up the heat and the pressure, so you don't feel it as much. He looks a lot cooler in the moment. If you put someone like Deuce Knight, who goes from an Auburn team that missed a bowl game and fired their coach, and he got his shot to go out there and perform against Mercer one time, and throw him into being a full-time starter at an Ole Miss team that is coming off of a playoff run and has big expectations and is going all in the portal, there's going to be a lot of questions in my mind on can he handle that type of pressure. That'd be my only point about Ole Miss. But I would like to say that I think they're going to be there again.
Shout out to our graphics intern, by the way. It's a nice-looking graphic.
Yeah, beautiful graphic. Okay. Tier two, the bowl tier, the just missed it tier. I got it for you here.
Oof, this was rough. This is where you beat me, I think.
Yeah, so you had Texas at 12-0.
Yep.
I had them at 10-2, a little closer. We both were way wrong on Vanderbilt. We thought they would take a step back. In fact, they had a program record-setting year in all facets. We were a little low on Missouri. Both had them at 6-6. They ended up 8-4, lost their bowl game 8-5. Tennessee, we were kind of all over it. They just performed right over us. We really gave Syracuse a little too much credit, and we both picked Tennessee to lose that opener in Atlanta, and they had too much firepower for Fran Brown and the Orange. So that was really a major difference. Here's one where we both also blew it, especially me. You had LSU 9-3. I had them 11-1 in the SEC championship game. Obviously, we know what happened.
Heisman? Nussmeier for Heisman?
Obviously, we know what happened. Nussmeier played injured most of the year. Brian Kelly gets fired, and that becomes a 7-5 and eventually 7-6.
I'm just really happy that LSU now is exercising the fiscal responsibility that Governor Landry advocated for when they made the move, not spending any crazy money and anything like that.
You, of course, not at all. You can't see this one as well, but Mississippi State went 5-7. And we were a little low on that, although I advocated for Mississippi State a little more than you did. You're not a big fan of Jeff Levy, but I knew that they had too much talent to just have a bottom feeder type of year and thought they might punch up. They were extremely close to getting into bowl eligibility. Which
Hugh Freeze now. Oh, we're so close, brother.
And obviously, right there. Obviously they did get into a bowl game, but that was because of how the bowl season ended up shaking out.
Yeah.
But into actual bowl eligibility at 6-6,
yep.
which was would have been an incredibly overachieving year and a great second year for Levy in terms of making a nice progression. I think a lot of talent with Cornell Taylor coming back next year survives a scare in that bowl game. No tears or breaks for him. I would continue to watch out for them to punch up. That's a team to me that next year that looks like they're going to just scratch up a little more, 6-6, 7-5 maybe. And that's going to steal games from somebody else, Craig, and yep. put somebody else in the cellar.
37 players in the transfer portal from Mississippi State. Like, again, that's a common theme. Again, he changed defensive coordinators. I know our guy Ryan's going to be excited about that. By the way, shout out to our guy Ryan on Twitter. Probably has some of the best tailgates down in Stark, Vegas.
Move to bring Arnett back. It's kind of a weird thing, but I think that it strengthens the defense. But to your point, that turnover is 37 is a lot.
So where does Vanderbilt go? So this is my question with Vanderbilt. Yep. Was it Clark Lee or was it Diego Pavia? And I guess what I'm gonna lump in with Diego Pavia is I'm lumping in Jerry Kill and Tim Beck, who have totally transformed Vanderbilt's offense. And that's where, like, yes, they have Jared Curtis, who was a 5-star phenom, number one ranked quarterback in the class, late flip from the Dogs, went to Vanderbilt, got the money he wanted in playing time. But I'm gonna wonder, are they 500 next year? Or, you know, what does that slide look like? Because I do not see this going continually up for our buddy Clark Lee.
Well, they're not gonna be golden next year, that's for sure. Ooh, I think they do take a little bit of a slide. 500 is exactly where my head goes. I don't want to be this guy with the major hot take this early.
Oh, do it. Bring it.
I'm not sold on Jared Curtis.
That's why Kirby Smart said bye.
I don't know that the level of competition was there to put him at a bona fide number one spot this early. And I have some question marks based on some things that I've heard about his recruitment process, about his competitive mindset and his leadership ability. And if he gets thrust into a starting role as a true freshman with those types of question marks, I think it's going to be a little bit of a tough learning curve for a Vanderbilt team that I think overall probably still maintains more talent than what we're used to seeing on a Vanderbilt roster. So is there a potential that they punch up a couple of times? Yes. Are they going to have to play a little bit of a different style of football? Absolutely. Diego Pavia was the heart and soul and willed them to multiple victories.
Yep.
And we can say all the negative things that we want to say about Diego Pavia. And there's plenty of things to pick apart in terms of his personality and antics and off the field stuff. But that's kind of what you get, I think, is if you're going to have this level of attitude and moxie that says you cannot beat me, even though logically that doesn't make sense, you can't turn that type of thing on and off, and it spills into every area of your life. Right. Now that he's gone, there's a huge leadership hole. There's a huge trust hole. There's a huge where do we turn? You can't replace that guy.
Nope.
It's going to take multiple people. And so, yeah, Craig, I do think that probably somewhere around 500 is about right.
So you're saying LSU and Texas probably jump up into the playoff next year, I would assume.
Yeah, that would be a good thought pattern. I would agree. I really like where Texas is, and we're going to get to the portal in just a minute. I like Arch's progression. I like where they are. Obviously,
I like Arch's receivers and running backs.
Yeah. And I think putting more players around him with his continued progression, it's not that he was bad this year. Everybody overreacted. He was just taking the natural path of learning that he needed to take. And I think that we saw him kind of mature over the course of the year and figure out a little bit about who he is and play to his strengths. All right. We missed on Kentucky. We were a little low on Kentucky. You had them bottoming out. I had them at 4-8. They end up 5-7. Still fired their coach.
Yep.
Here's where we got bitten 2 years in a row, Craig. We both had Auburn at 9-3. For a second year in a row, despite our questions of Brother Hugh and the weeble wobble that was the Auburn program, we looked at the talent and said, man, like, if they put it together,
they'd be okay.
They will be okay. And that is what is so mind-boggling about that team, is that they had a lot of talent. They come out 5-7. They've lost some of that talent.
They scored a whole lot of points when Brother Hugh took off.
And now they've lost a lot of that talent, and they're in kind of a rebuild mode, and they're going to have to just button down the hatches for Alex Golish.
What does success look like for Alex Golish in year one? Is it 6-3? Is it 6-6?
Yeah, it's 6-6. I think so. You're rewriting the whole thing. And this is where my patience argument is going to come right back into play. There's too many teams, Craig. Yep. There's too many teams for everybody to turn it around in 2 years. There's too many. It's not going
to
happen.
You need someone to come down. You need Tennessee to fall down. You need Vanderbilt to come down so Auburn can go back up.
It does not happen. You can't – everybody can't be up. And so it doesn't matter if you flip the roster in 2 years. You also have to flip the culture, and you have to have some lucky breaks, and you can't have a ton of injuries, and you have to – you know, there's just so many pieces that go into that. So, yeah, I think 6-6 would be a great year for Alex Golish in year one. And to that point, Billy Napier is out of Gainesville. We shot a little high on that one too, surprisingly, because neither of us liked that program and thought that they were going to have any success this year. But another place that had tons of talent, and you just look at the roster and go, surely they're not going to do what we predicted them to do last year, and they end up 4-8. You had them at 6-6. I had them at 7-5. So now what is John Summerall doing year one? We both missed terribly on South Carolina. And
we couldn't spell South Carolina.
And we were close. That's true. And we were close on Arkansas. I actually got that one right as my bottom feeder at 2-10.
Yeah, that was pretty close.
Yeah, Summerall is the other big question mark here, and I'm sure you have a Beamer question, but we may or may not get to it as we are rapidly approaching another break.
No, actually, so my biggest jump on this page right here, Will Stein at Kentucky.
That's a great move.
I think Stein's going to get them 7 or 8 wins year one. I think he's going to be the biggest mover out of the group. I think there's a lot of momentum there. I really like what he is doing. I think he's going to end up being one of the top hires of the cycle. I think he's at Kentucky maybe a year or two before he upgrades.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do agree that it's a stepping stone for Will Stein, and we'll see what he is able to do in terms of elevating that program. Some talent coming in, and we'll see if that offense can get it going. All right, let's hit our final break, and then we'll be back to give you portal winners and losers and pick the college football playoff. We'll be back in just a moment.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
Oh, man! The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to our final segment here on SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. I want to remind you to go out and follow it at SEC Sunday Show, our new account and channel there. We'll be broadcasting there beginning next week as well. Yep. All right.
I've got an SEC update from the NFL for you. And this is also related to you, Mr. Patriots fan. Nick Foles, Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, if you remember correctly, Rob. Note for the Broncos and their fans, I know it has been an emotional 24 hours. I feel for Bo and the team, and I'm sending prayers for a strong recovery. A positive note going into the game versus the Patriots is that they struggle against backup quarterbacks in championship-style games. So obviously referencing Auburn's own Bo Nix, also played at Oregon, Denver Broncos, winning quarterback, broke his ankle. Rob, what do you say to Nick Foles? Should the Patriots be worried?
That's funny because obviously Nick Foles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, for those of you who are college football junkies and don't watch the NFL. But, it's an interesting matchup. You get rid of Bo Nix, who's just proven to be an absolute winner, former Auburn quarterback, and replace him with another former Auburn quarterback who also was a transfer in Jarrett Stidham, who has not thrown a meaningful pass since 2023. Also, Jarrett Stidham was drafted by the Patriots and was a student of Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels for years. He took him with him to the Raiders, and then Stidham has bounced around after McDaniels was fired and came back to New England. So I think that they will be prepared and ready for the skill set of Jarrett Stidham. The issue is much more on the end of the Broncos pass rush. Drake May was stripped like 45 times by Will Anderson, former Crimson Tide linebacker today, coming off the edge. And when you talk about Benito and some of those guys in Denver coming after Drake May, he's going to have to protect the football and not turn it over and give Jarrett Stidham and that offense easy opportunities in the AFC Championship game. But great references to some former SEC greats who will be playing in that game. A lot of SEC flavor in these NFL playoffs. That is for sure. All right, transfer portal, Craig.
Yep.
Who are your big winners? Actually, yeah, let's start with winners. I want to start on a high note and end on those that suck.
All right, so big winners. I already talked about billable hours. Second big winner, new vocabulary words. Shout out to Tony Siragusa and his cat, Sadie. Short-term signee. Georgia picked up a new signee on Friday. Bryson Beaver from Oregon, not Oregon State. That would have been like natural, what it seemed like. But Bryson Beaver was a short-term signee with Oregon. What is a short-term signee, is it? Well, first off, read last word. You can read my beautiful waxing poetic about Georgia and the SEC. But a short-term signee is when a young man signs in December to say, hey, I'm going to your school, only to enter the transfer portal in January and go to another school. a la Julian Sain, who was at Alabama. Then when the GOAT retired, he went to Ohio State. So shout out to billable hours, new vocabulary words. And again, it wouldn't be the Michigan Yankees segment of the day if I didn't give a shout out for the winner, Liam Danitz. Rob's like, who the hell is Liam Danitz? Liam Danitz played at Hope College in beautiful Holland, Michigan, known for their Tulip Festival in May, and also Dutch Village. Great little spot to go and visit with the wife and kids. He's a D3 edge player. He's about 6'3", 230 pounds. Hit the transfer portal, and my boy has leveled up. He will be playing at Wisconsin, a D1 school, or so it's rumored, next fall.
There you have it, Craig's winners of the transfer portal. Billable
hours. How off the rails are those?
You know what? That was beautiful because I was not thinking off the rails here, and you gave us the flavor that we needed to kind of end the show on a very, very SEC Sunday night. It just means more football and coffee, whatever, you know, throw it back type of note. So for those of you who have been with us for years and you know our personalities, there you have it. If you're brand new tonight and you just tuned in, we are bringing casual sports conversations to the serious sports fan. We cover it. We know the ins and outs. We understand the intricacies, but we also understand that sometimes you're on a bar stool or in a diner and you just need to have a casual conversation about the game that is not digging into all the nuts and bolts. So we have segments where we dig in and we have segments where we fall off the rails. Yep. And Craig, thank you for taking us there with billable hours, short-term signee, and whoever the heck that D3
is. Liam Danitz.
Liam Danitz. All right. Here, I'm going to make it easy for you in my top three winners in the transfer portal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
LSU, Ole Miss, and Texas are 1, 2, and 3. So it would be easy to say that those three teams are the biggest winners in the SEC. Obviously, I think that LSU is has to be in this conversation because of the year that they had last year and now the intense expectations that will be placed on this program. For the third time in the show, I will reference Mike Morgan and the high watermark. LSU is a national championship program. They went and got a coach who put together a national championship type of team in the Ole Miss Rebels this past year.
0
got them into playoff games. Got them into a deep college football playoff run by putting that group together. You can't tell me that they would have lost the games that they won had he been the coach. I think we can only make an argument.
It wasn't an argument. It was a discussion. We weren't talking politics. We were talking sports. So it was a discussion. The long discussion of whether or not Lane Kiffin wins that Georgia game or not. Does Lane have the ability? You know what? Actually, it was on this show. I think it was with Casey. It was with Casey and John T. Sports. That's where the discussion was. Never mind. Shout out to our friends who are on this show. But I don't know if Lane wins that second game. Pete's a little bit different than Lane.
Yeah.
Pete has 2 college football playoff wins. Lane is still looking for number one. So easy with the national championship talk.
I think that he put together a national championship caliber roster. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. That's fair. That is fair.
And so the expectations, when we talk about the transfer portal, the expectations for LSU is going to be to go win a national championship next year, at least be in the semifinals.
Yep.
And to be number one, 38 commitments. Obviously, when you have coaching turnover, you have a lot of departures. You've made reference to some of these coaches who are in deep in their tenure and are still seeing major departures. But it is commonplace to have a lot of departures in a coaching turnover. So you would see that here. LSU, 38 commitments. And they are averaging 88.09 rating per player. I hate transfer portal ratings on players. I'm not sure how we can be really accurate with those. But
it's hard to judge roster. Like, we used to talk about, you know, like what were the 5 stars and everything like that, but it totally changed. Looking at LSU's schedule next year, home against Clemson, at Ole Miss September 19th, home against Texas A&M the following week, at Auburn, and then they're home against Alabama, and then home against Texas. Those are like 4 or 5 big games that I am circling.
Yep.
That are we sure Lane has progressed enough to where he can win those big ranked games, because that was still a question up until even this year. I think you know, Texas is going to be highly rated. Bama will be Bama, and Saban or Kiffin always has an issue with that. And I'm sure Vaught Hemingway will be like nuts, because you know that game is going to be at 6:30.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. And you mentioned Texas in there too. As much as I would love to include, and I'll just take a break here to highlight that former SEC star Luther Burden is the target of Caleb Williams' pass on 4th and goal with 3 minutes in the game. Bears down by 7, and the pass is batted away, incomplete. So the Bears turn it over on downs on the 3-yard line, down 7. It'll be up to the Rams to run out the clock now. If you're splitting time, there's your update. Okay. I got to highlight Texas here really quickly, because I think the skill talent they've added, we mentioned Arch before. I think the skill talent they've added to Arch's skill set and his progression is going to be setting a high expectation once again in Austin next year. And then lastly, the other winner that I would say outside of LSU and Texas for me is Austin Simmons and Missouri. Because here's a kid that we had really high expectations for last year, and obviously somebody who is very intelligent, graduated college, was in a master's program at 19, somebody who was a dual sport athlete, a baseball player, somebody that Lane Kiffin put a lot of trust in, put a lot of confidence in going into the season as the starter, whole off season. Expected to take that Ole Miss team. Obviously an injury held him back, and then Chambliss came in and Wally pipped him. But I think there's still a lot left in the tank for Austin Simmons. And as much as we have said this name on this show time and time again, Eli Drinkwitz is a really good offensive coach. He puts players in good positions. You know they're going to be able to run the ball. It's going to be balanced. And I honestly think this may be the most talent they've had at the quarterback position there in quite some time.
Why did you leave Ole Miss, though? What? That was the question for me of like, okay, sure, it didn't work out this year. You got Wally pipped.
I have no intel to say this.
Yeah.
I would guess that he is a Charlie Weiss Jr. guy. And he did not get the invite to come over from Lane. And so he found his next best opportunity. Or it was a payday.
Well, and that was the interesting thing, because when the whole Lane thing came down, you saw a couple of media outlets out there like Deuce Knight to Ole Miss was like the worst kept secret. There was a lot of interaction there. But you know, like you wonder, like, is Missouri in a better spot?
Yep.
And again, this is not me trying to upset Maggie or trying to think about it, but it's like with where you're going, seems like there's more questions at Missouri than there would be Ole Miss. But again,
I could definitely see that argument. I just think that the marriage of Drink and Simmons is a really good one. I think it benefits both of them.
So, and here's the thing with the transfer portal, we always assume it's the player making the choice.
Yeah.
And we look at a guy like David Livingston from Texas, who was Archer's roommate, who hit the transfer portal. Some cryptic messages you read between the lines. Sounds like Sark saying, hey, we love you, but there may not be room for you. So he goes on his tour. And what I really love about David Livingston, he says, Sark, I'm not going that far away. He goes right up to goes right up the street to Oklahoma, and he's going to be right there just to remind Texas. Yep. So I'm really looking forward to Red River next year. But I wonder if that's the same thing with Austin, where maybe he didn't have a chance saying, hey, you know what? We're going to make a clean break. You got your degree. You go ahead and move on.
Yep. I'll be your editor really quick, just for those listening. That would be Parker Livingston. But we'll keep an eye on him in Norman next year as we move forward.
Dr. Okay. Livingston, I presume. A little social studying.
Who is all right, look, it's about time to get out of here. Give me your thoughts. National championship game is tomorrow night. Obviously, you are documented as one of the greatest Carson Beck fans of all time, and so we know that you are throwing the U and pulling for the Canes tomorrow night. In all seriousness, hearts out of it, just an analysis standpoint, who wins and why in 60 seconds.
So I was listening to a great show earlier tonight. Young man, the host was talking with an Arkansas great, talked about how the Arkansas team was experienced, had a couple of great young talent, and that could propel them in the March tournament. So with that, I'm going to take the experienced Indiana Hoosiers, and I'm going to say that they're going to turn over young Carson Beck, and they're going to take their coffee and espresso with sugar, the cappuccino, and say, no, thank you, sir. Indiana wins 31-10.
Yeah, I'll be your editor one more time because Carson Beck is not young. I know that just rolled off the tongue.
Oh, no, you. No, I was talking about you were the host. No, no, no. You were the host. You were the host.
But, you know, if we look at it from an analysis standpoint, I'm also going to take Indiana because I think that the experience is definitely there. But here, but I think that overall we see a more well-oiled machine with this Indiana football team from top to bottom. I think Miami has more talent. And they're going to have
– running back room is so good.
And they have a ton of skill talent, and the defensive front is insanely fast, and that's going to cause some problems at times. But just the sheer execution from top to bottom on both sides of the football for Indiana, I think is something that is difficult to overcome. I don't think it's a 21-point game like you said, but I could see this being a 10 or 13-point difference, something like a 30-17. I don't even know if there's going to be that many points scored though. Maybe like a 27-14. Feels a little better to me, 27-14 Indiana, something like that.
Can we please put to rest though that Carson Beck has this great redemption story? Like it's so tiring.
Not if they win the game.
Yes, it's just I can't wait.
I hope for your sake. I hope for your sake he goes like 25 for 30 for
27 yards
for like 341 and 4 touchdowns, and he also runs for one. And they win. Right. And they win 35-34.
Over under number of Carson Beck interceptions. Give me 2. Give me 2. Go 1.5.
I'll go
one
under.
And a half
to the number. I'll go under.
Because he won't throw a pass over 5 yards.
No, I just think he only throws one. All right.
Couple screen to Tony.
This has been SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. As always, thanks to our friend Casey Cregan. Again, shout out to Connor Goodson of Hog Sports for coming on tonight. We are presented by Hewitt Domodaros Law, hdlawsc.com. And if any of our drink people want to sponsor us as well, we're going to stop shouting you guys out if you don't throw us some money. All right.
Take a McDonald's sponsor.
Enjoy your week, ladies and gents. We'll see you on all the shows here on the Chief Sports Network throughout the week. Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show, the late night show, the JCM will be on with Mike Morgan and JC Sherbert on College Football Forever. We've got Four Quarter Friday for our South Carolina high school sports fans coming up every Friday morning. And we'll be back with you next Sunday night to recap the week that was and look forward to what is officially the college football offseason next week and continue to squeak our shoes on the hardwood. We'll see you next time.